From the Lynn to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 29th day of February, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net. He's in Houston, Texas today at Commodity Classic and kicked off this morning the early risers session for some 600 gathered in that one room there, along with Ed Usett from University of Minnesota, an agricultural economist that we talk to periodically. We'll hear from Matt just exactly what he and Ed had to say to the crowd gathered and the questions that they were asking them as well. Then as we finish up our time, we'll take a deeper look at the weather forecast and how the transition from El Nino has historically impacted the Corn Belt with Mike Tenor. He's at tstorm.net. That's T-Storm Weather, and we'll do all of that on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. By the way, registration for the All Day Ag Outlook will be closing soon, so buy your ticket today online at willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. The Farm Doc team will be on hand during the day to help guide you through the crop insurance decisions as well as ARC and PLC, and to talk about crop prospects here in the United States, what price outlook might be. We'll also take up that same topic with our series of regular analysts that you hear here at Illinois Public Media at willag.org. And we'll take up a couple of extra things for the day as well. SAF with the director of the Center for Sustainable Aviation here on campus, and the developing stories with dicamba and EPA, along with the Environmental Species Act. Weed scientist Aaron Hager will help us with that, but you'll need to join us if you can. Do that now by registering at willag.org for the All Day Ag Outlook.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net now joins us from Houston, Texas, where this morning he was part of the early riser session for Commodity Classic. Good day to you, Matt. I appreciate you taking some time with me. Do you have a good audience today?
Oh, yeah, we had a huge audience. I would say, I don't know, somewhere, I think they had the room set up for 550 to 600, but it was standing room only. So we had a really good crowd there. It was nice to have so many people. Of course, everyone, has some concern with what's going on with the markets here lately. So we expected to have a good crowd, but, essentially it was a pleasant surprise. It was the first year, actually, they tried to have more than one of these early riser sessions on the same day. And so we didn't know, how that would affect our crowd, but it really didn't hurt us much.
Yeah, so you and Ed Usett took the stage today. I'm sure you listened to Ed. Can you recap what he had to say, and then we'll talk about what you had to say, too?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, Ed talked a lot about, of course, he's written a couple of books about marketing. Marketing is, basically marketing simple. It's just not easy, and he makes some really valid points, but he talks about people's tendencies, whether they sell ahead of time, whether they sell during right across the scale, or whether they, store, maybe they only store till spring, maybe they store all the way till the next fall. And so he tries to draw some conclusions, but the gist of his conversation this morning, was with all of this talk about renewable diesel expansion, potential, for sustainable aviation fuel if the tax credits come through, should that impact a producer with their marketing? And, he basically said he doesn't believe it should impact their marketing. They should continue to market, in the manner that he basically is recommending. So a very, very sharp discussion. Of course, I talked a lot about the fundamentals and, how I would try to take a little bit of the, emotion out of the marketing, what worked in the last few years, what hasn't worked. And, one thing that we definitely identified that has not worked well, is to come in here and sell or buy all your inputs, without locking in some of your output, so to speak. And so, we've been burnt 2 years in a row, it looks like 23 and 24, paying quite a bit for fertilizer, and then seeing prices dip precipitously. So you know, just tried to focus in on how can we simplify our marketing plans a little bit.
Yeah. So as you do that, one of the things, as you discussed, was to go ahead and lock in prices. I think maybe something you might have learned from Daryl Good as well. Once you have an input, you can lock in a price based on especially nitrogen, because it tracks the price of corn so closely. And I would guess that what Ed Ussett was saying along the way was part of the fundamental discussion you would have had with the audience today related to renewable diesel and to SAF, is that the markets look forward, and when those things are about to come in, you'll see them in the market, but they're not there yet at this point. And so that's why you might dismiss or not worry about those as a function. Then you've got to the points of where and when do we begin to market a crop now that it's worth a lot less than it was in the last year? How do you deal with that? And what did the audience ask, and what did you tell them?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that we've talked about is that when you're looking at 24, you know, if you've gone ahead and locked in all of your inputs and you can't actually say that you're going to make money at average yields, it's probably the second or third inning in this game. And so it's awfully early yet. A lot of things could happen. Maybe we don't lock in a loser of a situation. We might be a little more patient, if you will. But at the same time, locking in some sort of worst case scenario, you know, on a portion of your production, as long as you've got some upside potential based on your marketing plan, how you put it together, that probably makes some sense, at least on a portion of those bushels. So it's just a matter of not putting too many eggs in any one basket, because there's no question that there's a lot of volatility in here that could certainly bite us in the rear end if we don't handle it correctly.
So this is the last trading day of the month of February. We'll have the final crop insurance figures for both corn and soybeans, and then farmers will be able to use that as one of their tools. By the way, I'll talk with Nick Paulson tomorrow for our program from the University of Illinois about some of the things related to crop insurance. I'm guessing that many asked you about crop insurance and what they maybe might consider this season. Did you have some thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit about it. I mean, my thing is I don't know that I want to do the buy up necessarily. I think we get up to 80-85% on RP. It's probably a pretty good place to reside. But as far as going on up to, you know, 90 or even 95% with what that costs this year, you know, I think with the volatility and the options being so low, a producer can actually probably do a little bit better job. Maybe taking some of the risk out of the game, cheaper anyway, through options. It just takes a little bit of studying. And I've always said, you know, if I'm buying those, insured bushels and I'm getting those insured, then I want to at least be able to use that as a part of my marketing plan. So, you know, I absolutely think that using that government subsidized put, so to speak, makes a lot of sense. I just don't know about doing the buy up at this point. At least on my operation, it sure didn't look like it was going to work for me very well.
Yeah, depending on ARC and PLC, and you would have had to have PLC this year or yes. Last year, you could use the SCO. And I don't recall where you stood on that one last year, other than I believe you used ECO as the buy up because prices were so high, you were trying to cover everything that you possibly could, or maybe it was the previous year.
Right.
But that was one of the things that you've done in the past. And this year, no, that's not a decision you think that is worthwhile. What did you tell them about old crop? Because many will be terribly worried, a lot of pressure in the marketplace. And I'm guessing the pressure now is some of the pressure, at least for soybeans, is coming because of the export market out of Brazil, a crop that's coming in and being sold and marketed just much as if we were here in the United States and in harvest time, correct?
Correct. And so, you know, you're in a situation where if the USDA is correct in Brazilian production, they're going to have the most stocks on hand they've ever had. And so obviously that puts you in a situation where any sort of rally could be rewarded pretty quickly. It's a tough game we're playing. You know, beans did not hold support from last summer, this last week. And so unfortunately it definitely opens up the downside to more potential downside. But my thought process really on either old crop corn or beans is that you've got to understand what it's costing you just simply to hold on to them, especially if it's in commercial storage. So we've cleaned up all of our old crop sales, both corn and beans, for quite some time. But if I still had a hold of some, I'd probably get myself in a situation where I'm more risk averse. I don't think that the, I think the downside or the low, if you will, is in for now, you know, but I think later in the year, you know, if we end up planting 92 or 3 million acres of corn, I think that the downside could look a little worse than what we've already seen.
This morning, I suspect you took questions from the audience. What were the things that were asked that you thought about and maybe dismissed, or thought about and thought were really good ideas? And here's an example. I would guess that the Western Corn Belt or even the Eastern Corn Belt guys were saying, hey, it's dry out west. That's going to give me a lift, isn't it, for old crop corn or something else?
Yeah, I mean, they were definitely asking, especially when you get into Iowa, parts of Nebraska, super dry, wondering if that could maybe give a jolt to this corn market, especially on new crop. And then they're wondering about exports, of course. And I basically told them that the Sabrina crop's a bust. There's no doubt we could see additional corn exports. We really like looking at where corn usage for ethanol right now is going. You know, it looks like we could increase another maybe 50 million bushels. And then as far as exports go for corn, we're actually competitive, whereas for soybeans, we're not. So we are very concerned that that carry on beans actually could grow a little bit more yet. So, you know, there was a lot of good questions about exports of renewable fuels. You know, what we thought maybe was going to be the announcement, which is supposed to come this week, as far as tax credits for corn-based ethanol. You know, I think that's probably going to be tied to production practices, which isn't a horrible thing. But at the same time, you know, I sure wish that we could maybe promote this ethanol a little bit more. If we're really going to go after cleaner burning fuel, that's certainly a place we can go after it. So those were the main couple, three questions that we had. To be honest, Ed and I both typically present for usually an hour, and both of us had 20 to 25 minutes. So, you know, we kind of pinched down our time, and then we only had about 10 minutes for Q&A. So there was only three or four questions there, but we had a lot of questions afterwards, and a lot of those centered around renewable fuels and usage, you know, and then what do we do if we end up with a 3 billion carry on corn, which is something I discussed a little bit this morning.
And you said?
I basically said you have to have a marketing plan for that. You know, again, you got to have a worst case scenario locked in, you know, even if it's not the rosiest of situations. I like setting a floor in place, even if it's not up to my break even, whereas maybe I've got a ceiling 50 cents above my break even, you know, to kind of help me pay for that floor. But, you know, a person has to at least understand the ramifications, especially if they're not going to get aggressive on their crop insurance. You know, this level between $4.60 and $4 certainly could be a level that is really tough to protect if we don't do something, you know, on an option standpoint.
Hey, thanks much. We will talk with you again next week.
Yep, absolutely, Todd. Thank you.
That's Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net. He came to us from the Commodity Classic in Houston, Texas today. The close of the month of February brings with it a March 15 deadline for crop insurance and ARC and PLC safety net decisions for farmers and landowners. And tomorrow during our program, we'll talk with agricultural economist, a member of the Farm Doc team, Nick Paulson, about those decisions and the crop insurance prices for the month and how the volatility factor that was set these last five trading days of the month will impact premiums. You can learn more tomorrow or at next Tuesday's All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. He will be there as well, and you can ask questions of Nick Paulson at that point. Nick will be just one of many members of the Farm Doc team that will be there, including Joanna Colusi, who specializes in South American crops and what their prospects look like, along with Joe Jansen, agricultural economist, to discuss price outlook, and we'll take up the price of farmland with the Farm Doc team as well. Bruce Sherrick will wrap up our day. We'll start, by the way, in the morning with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions, who will take up the weather forecast and follow that up with an outlook panel for soybeans. Take a little break. Phil Ansell will be there from the Center for Sustainable Aviation to talk about SAF. He's here on campus from the University of Illinois. And then Aaron Hager will take the stage to talk about weeds, dicamba, and the Endangered Species Act as it relates to herbicides in general. You won't want to miss any of that. And in the afternoon. We'll wrap up that day again with a corn panel that includes Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, Greg Johnson, and Joe Jansen. And finally, we'll end the day by 3 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern Time with the Farmland Price Outlook with Bruce Scherig. We hope you will join us. You can do that by registering today at willag.org. Registration closes soon. The cost is just $40. Mike Tenora, the owner of T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online, now joins us to take a look at the growing regions across the planet and how climate and weather is impacting all of them. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Todd.
I want to start with a little something different today. Some of the content you created there for tstorm.net. And I'll put a link to this up on the willag.org website so folks can find it and watch it if they'd like. This is a little video about the transition, I believe, from El Nino or away from El Nino and what that generally might mean in the United States. Can you talk me through it, please?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. That video was sent out to all of the T-Storm subscribers on Monday, and then we posted it on Twitter a couple days ago just so everybody kind of get a look at it for people who aren't subscribed. But the main point of the video is that we're in this very strong El Nino now. It's one of the five strongest on record, at least going back to 1960. And as we move forward, all projections are for us to either turn into the neutral state or La Nina state later this year. And that transition is what's important for corn and soybean yield potential coming up. So once we put it all together, we basically have six different analogs coming up, and those are 1973, 83, 95, 98, 2010, and 2016. And that's based on the strength of the El Nino now and then where it's projected to be around 6 months from now. And if you look at what happened in those years across the seven-state corn belt, those springs were pretty much wet. Five of those six were at least slightly wetter than normal, and several of them were considerably wetter than normal. So over the course of the planting season and even into the early growth phases for corn and soybeans, it'll probably be wetter than normal. So that'll be something we'll monitor. But whether or not it turns into some large-scale planting delay, that only happened once or twice in these years. So that's not a certain bet, but rains are a pretty good bet. Once we get into the key part of the summer, which is really where we determine corn and soybean yields, well, in July and August, rains were kind of all over the place. We had a drought in 83. We have one of the wettest summers on record in 2016, and so there's a lot of variability there, so no real clues. But temperatures are more interesting because we never had a cool summer with this setup, and several of them were pretty hot. So heat is probably going to be a factor at some point coming up this summer, but also kind of like we were talking about earlier, whether or not it's super hot like we had in 1983 and 1995, or just a little bit warm like all the other years, that's what we have to kind of monitor. But it's unlikely to be ideally cool this summer based on this setup.
Can I ask a follow-up question here, which is related to the heat? As the climate has changed from 1980 until now, I believe the high to low range has closed or gotten tighter. Do you think that in this kind of situation that means higher overnight temperatures, higher daytime temperatures if they should come about, or some other form that gives you a higher temperature for the whole range of the summer?
Well, it's a great question. I mean, that's called the diurnal range, which is the difference between the daytime temperature and the nighttime temperature. And that has narrowed over time, maybe a little bit. But the one thing to note is that the maximum temperatures have come down while the minimum temperatures have come up. So we're actually seeing a narrower range in temperatures, like you're noting. But the mean hasn't changed all that much in the course of the summer. So once you average it out and look at the daily temperatures, we don't see a real strong trend there in the summertime. The place that it does show up is in the wintertime. If you start in December, then go through January and February, you can see a marked temperature increase over the last 130 years. In fact, winters now are about 3 to 4 degrees warmer than they were 125 to 135 years ago in the Corn Belt. And that might not sound like a lot, but just think of it like this. Let's say there's 90 days in the winter, so, you know, 3 months. You multiply 90 times 4, which is 4 degrees per day warmer than normal. That's 360 total degrees. That's a big number when you measure it over that period of time. But that's showing up in the winter, not so much in the summer. So, you know, you can argue whether or not the maximum temperature or the minimum temperature is more important to corn and soybean yields. But I think in the end, if you just look at that mean, that's really where you can tell what's going on. If you get a real hot day, chances are the nighttime is also going to be a little bit warm too. The only time things like that break down is in a big drought like we had in 2012. If you look at the temperature range in 2012, that diurnal range, you'll see it was pretty wide. I mean, we had low temperatures in the 60s, followed by high temperatures in the 100s, so maybe a 40-degree spread. You know, this summer, or in a normal summer, that spread might only be 25 degrees, but it's that mean that really matters. You know, even though the spread was big in 2012, the mean was pretty high, so that's why we had a lot of heat.
Let's come back to the winter months, which you just discussed a little bit. Thank you for that education there, too. I appreciate that history. We have been mild this winter, and certainly in the last week. Are we going to stay mild?
Well, we are, certainly into mid-March. You know, this is being driven by the El Nino. When you look at these El Ninos, most of them are warmer than normal. We're now going to have 4 of 5 in the Corn Belt, having been way warmer than normal, and pretty similar to this one, the winter of 82 into 83, as well as 97 into 98, and even 2015 into 16. All those winters were very mild, very similar to this one. You know, and it's going to continue here for a couple more weeks. We'll have another round of record-setting mildness coming up this weekend and into early next week. A pretty strong cold front moves through Monday, but that front is not going to be as intense as the one that passed yesterday. So we aren't looking for a sudden change to real cold weather. It'll actually stay warmer than normal. So this is going to keep the wheat crop moving along because, unlike some springs where you're real cold in the beginning, this one's starting out mild. So we'll see wheat ease out of dormancy fairly rapidly.
And then turn your attention to South America. Anything to note this week there?
You know, it's quiet right now. We're kind of in between some different seasons, you know, related to crops. But probably the most important thing is that Rio Grande do Sul, as well as the far northern areas of Brazil. These two areas have soybeans that mature the latest, so they could benefit the most from rains. And those two areas both look like they're going to get at least average rains over the next couple of weeks. So, you know, that'll keep those crops looking okay in those regions.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it. We will put a link to the video up on our website at willag.org for those who want to see it. And just offhand, Mike, as a reminder to those who listen, you have 2 degrees from here at the University of Illinois, one in meteorology, the other a master's in agricultural economics. And the place that I caught the video was because Scott Irwin, and you studied under Scott and Daryl Good, I believe, posted it to Twitter. So it is something he found of his interest as well. I look forward to talking with you again next week.
Yeah, that sounds great. And also Gary Schnicke, he was involved in all that research back in the day too.
Indeed. That's Mike Tenora. He is with T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. Thank you for joining us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, where today you can register for next Tuesday's All-Day Ag Outlook. The cost is just $40 at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We sure hope to see you there. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.